Okay, Dr. Tulin is out of town today, so he asked if I would stop by and teach your class. I guess it's easier for me to come here than for you to go where he is. I'm Professor Wilson. So where'd you leave off? Okay, so you know about the properties of electrons, protons, and neutrons? Okay. So a proton, positive charge, whereas an electron has a negative charge. Neutrons, as the name implies, are neutral. Did you talk about the mass of these particles? Oh, that's charge. Okay, so these are relative masses. If the proton and neutron both have a relative mass of 1, the electron comes out at just a little over 1/2000th. So it takes 1,700 or so electrons to equal the mass of 1 proton or neutron. Now, we use these particles. We use these particles to construct the atom. You guys haven't talked about Rutherford and his gold foil experiment? Okay, then we will skip that. So an atom is made of a nucleus, and it is, as we say, orbited, although it really isn't orbiting. It's orbited by electrons. The electrons, containing very little of the mass of the atom, the nucleons, which are the protons and the neutrons. All the protons and neutrons are found in the nucleus of the atom. It turns out that you can uniquely identify an atom simply by counting the number of protons, neutrons, and electrons that might be there. For example, carbon will always have 6 protons in the nucleus. If any atom has different than 6 protons, it cannot be carbon. That's what defines the elements. Another example, sodium will always have 11 protons. Where am I getting those numbers? Okay, it's from the periodic table. On our table, it's the number at the top right-hand corner. Okay, we have a name for that. The atomic number. Whenever you see the term number used, we will always be talking about an integer. It's counted out. There's no such thing as an atomic number of 6.1. It is either 6 or it is 7. Okay? So the atomic number refers to what the element is. Since an element is composed of both protons and neutrons, we also have a count for those. We call it the mass number. Add together the protons and the neutrons, you have the mass number. We have the nomenclature that looks like this. In front of the carbon, as a superscript, we can write 12. The 12 is the mass number. So if carbon has 6 protons and a mass number of 12, how many neutrons would be there? Have to be 6. Take the difference between 12 and 6, that's how many neutrons there are. So, summarizing here, Z, and I think your book probably uses this terminology. The atomic number is usually given the symbol capital Z. The mass number, A, There is a term for the number of neutrons, capital N, but we rarely use it. Turns out that most chemists don't need to have a specific count of the number of neutrons. The way we're using this symbol for carbon, if I use X to represent the elemental symbol from the periodic table, Z is a subscript in front of the symbol, and A is a superscript in front of the symbol. And the way we typically say this, instead of saying 12C, we call that carbon 12, the hyphen between them. So some of you may have heard of carbon 14, or some other version of carbon that has a different mass number than 12. Most carbon we find have mass numbers of 12. So if I give you a symbol that looks like U238, how many protons and how many neutrons are there? How are you going to find out Z? Periodic table. If I write down, you look for uranium, it's on the very bottom, 92. If I write down the 92 in front, those two, that information is redundant. Uranium tells us 92. So frequently, you will see the 92 missing. And you'll need a periodic table if you haven't memorized all the atomic numbers. You don't need to. So, how many protons? 92. How many neutrons? 238 minus 92. 146. Now, what about the electrons? In a neutral atom, there should be one negatively charged electron for every positively charged proton so that the charges exactly cancel. So in my uranium-238 example, the number of electrons must be also 92. In neutral atoms, protons and electrons always match. They're always the same number of each.
How do we know it's a neutral atom?
Well, if it isn't a neutral atom, we have a further designation. As a superscript following the atom, we can say what the overall charge is. So if I have uranium-238 plus 3, the 3 plus state, how many electrons would that have? Okay. We have to make sure that we have more protons than electrons. Otherwise, it wouldn't be positive. So we would have to subtract 3 from this. That would only have 89 electrons in it. Correct. So if in another example, let me do it over here. If I have in nitrogen 15, negative 3 ion, count the protons, neutrons, and electrons. So, nitrogen is element number 7. I could write the value of Z in as a subscript in front. So protons is 7. Neutrons have to be 8. So 7 plus 8 equals 15. And electrons, there are 10 of them. I started with 7 positive charges, and when I add the electrons to it, I must end up with negative 3 charge. So I could say this. Plus 7 minus the number of electrons equal the overall charge, which was minus 3. Yeah. So whatever you do, protons minus electrons will equal the charge on that atom. So we can be very specific about how many protons, neutrons, and electrons might be in a particular atom. If I make an atom out of 40 47 protons and 38 neutrons and 45 electrons. What's the symbol? Ag is which element? Hey, it's that missing phone. Hello, chemistry lecture. Scared them away, I'm afraid. I should have said something more or less intimidating. So, 47 is Ag. What element is that? Au is gold. Silver. So this is silver. So I could put a 47 down as Z. What is A, the atomic, the mass number? So adding these two numbers together, 85. So that is silver, 85. And what's the charge? Is it positive or negative? So that is silver, 85, plus 2 charge. No. In fact, I switch them back and forth all the time. Okay, so what we're describing here is a particular atom. And if you know that terminology, then you could figure out how many, or exactly how the atom is composed, how it's made. Now, let me clear some space. Have you heard the word isotope before? What does it mean? Okay, isotope actually has a couple different usages. The most popular one in the vernacular is wrong. A lot of people think that isotope means radioactive, and while there are many radioactive isotopes, that is not how we chemists use the word isotope. Iso means the same. I don't know what tope means. It's not the color. What we mean by isotope is the same element, and element is now defined for us as the same number of protons, same element, different mass number. So I can say carbon 12 is an isotope of carbon 13. I cannot say by itself carbon 12 is an isotope. An isotope is a set of things, or a member of a set of things. And there are, in fact, three common isotopes of carbon: carbon 12, carbon 13, and carbon 14. Each one is an isotope of the others. And only carbon 14 is radioactive. The other two are stable. They will last forever. So you notice each one has to be the same element, which means they all have 6 protons. To speed up a nuclear decay process, for example, yeah. It depends on what the process is. If it's a pure decay, for example, the decay of carbon 14, the answer is no. You cannot speed that up. It goes at the same rate that it always has. There are other kinds of nuclear reactions. For example, the fission reaction in a reactor, that you can change the rate by adding neutrons. But it's not really a catalyst process. Neutron is one of the reactants. So you add more neutrons, you're adding more reactant. So it goes faster. Do I need to say anything else about isotopes? Probably not. So if I have, here's a little problem. So some elements, as I differentiate them by the number of protons, neutrons, and electrons, get to that. We'll get to that. So if I have something with 8 protons and 8 neutrons and 8 electrons and another thing with 9 protons and 8 neutrons and 9 electrons, are they isotopes? Okay. What are they, by the way? Which oxygen and which chlorine, or which? Okay, which oxygen is it? Protons changed. Protons must be the same to be isotopes of each other. Now, it's true, they could be isotopes of some other element, or, you know, some other nuclide. It's the real name for what we call a single atom of something. That's oxygen 16 with a zero charge. What's this second one? Fluorine 17. Add together the protons and the neutrons. So if you translate the numbers into the elemental symbols, then it should be a little more obvious that we're not talking about the same element.
So an example of an isotope would be like 8.
Okay, so if I add another one here and say 8, 7, 8. These two are now isotopes of each other, or they belong to the same element. And so this third one would be what element? What elemental symbol do I use? Oxygen 15. Yes. O2 would be, so it would, that would be a single atom of oxygen 16. You notice when we write O2, we very, very rarely, you've never seen before, we've never written anything up here. There is a reason for that, and that's the next section. We're going to go over here today. Oh, it does. You could have an atom of this all by itself. You wouldn't call it an isotope until you had something to compare it to. Another fluorine atom with a different mass number. Fire away. Well, there is a... the mass number and the atomic number. No, we're writing the same thing on the periodic table, only the mass number is new information. That is not on the periodic table directly. It's there in a very hidden way. Yes, we'll get to that. We have not talked about that yet. No, there is no such thing as an atomic mass number. There is an atomic number and a mass number, but there's no atomic mass number. There is an atomic mass and an atomic weight. They're considered the same thing. But anything that ends with number must be an integer. So a mass number and an atomic number have to be integers. Flip it.
Yeah.
Correct. Yes.
For the mass number that is on the periodic chart, is that just an average of...
Yeah, we'll talk about that next. You'll see where it comes from. You need a lot of information to calculate that. Yes, provided oxygen 8 exists. Yes, they would be isotopes. Okay, any other questions? Fire away.
Okay, so then on your chemistry
can't remember what went up there.
It was 85. Where did the 85 come from? How did you know how
many? I made it up. Because, in fact, for most of these elements, there are a lot of different ones.
Oh.
You know, so for fluorine, there's fluorine. Fluorine 19, there's also fluorine 18, there's also fluorine 20, and probably a fluorine 21.
Okay, we'll
give it that. Yeah. Yeah, you don't invent that.
Okay.
There are a few nuclear chemists who can. They know the rules. I don't. Okay, oh yes. No, isotopes always come in pairs. You have to have two different mass numbers for the same element, and then you have isotopes. So oxygen 15 is an isotope of oxygen 16, and vice versa. But I can't just say fluorine 17 and call that an isotope, unless I say fluorine 17 is an isotope of all the other fluorines. Now, what about this number at the bottom? For silver, it's 107.868. For carbon, it was 12.0107 or something like that. Oh, we've abbreviated to fewer significant digits. For chlorine, 35.45. That number is not an integer. That's a calculated value of some kind. Well, if you look, let's look at carbon first. Carbon has a kind of a unique place. Most carbon is carbon 12. In fact, it's so common that that is used as the definition of a mass unit called the AMU. The atomic mass unit. Since atoms weigh so little, they didn't want to express everything in grams, because every time you wrote one down, it would be something like 10 to the minus 24 grams. They're massively small values. And so we've defined this AMU, atomic mass unit. And the conversion factor is something like 1.66 times 10 to the minus 24 AMU per gram. Or if I wanted to write it a different way, it would be 6.022 times 10 to the 23rd AM. I got that unit backwards. AMU per gram here. This should have been, sorry, grams per AMU. No, carbon, the carbon 12 is the definition of it. And they defined it that way because you can make very, very pure graphite.
Is it a one-atomic?
No. One carbon 12 atom weighs 12 atomic mass units. That's the definition. So one AMU is 1/12 of the mass of a carbon atom, carbon 12 atom. So those are the conversion factors. You can see that an AMU is a very, very small thing. Each. Well, the mass number will always be the count of protons and neutrons. The thing is, protons and neutrons don't weigh exactly one AMU. They're slightly off.
Okay. Well, in the book, he just said that just for...
They're close.
It's one for neutrons, one for protons.
Depends what you want to do with it. Sometimes it isn't.
Except for this class, we use one.
Okay.
But
in the next part, you can't use one or you'll get in big trouble. For the most part, you know, if I look on the periodic table and I see fluorine has a mass of 18.988, that's almost 17. So we can presume that fluorine 17 is the most abundant isotope of fluorine that's available naturally. So there's that. You can do a little bit of rounding to try to get to the nearest mass number. So here's how carbon works. One atom of carbon 12 weighs exactly 12 AMU. One atom of carbon 13 weighs 13.0043 AMU. Just a little bit off from 13. And carbon 12, let's see, 98.89%. So if you were to get a big block of graphite, very pure graphite, you would find that out of 100 atoms, 98.89 of them are carbon 12, and 1.11% of them are carbon 13. Those are the two naturally occurring isotopes of carbon. There is no naturally occurring isotope of carbon 14 in abundance. There turns out to be a little tiny bit that's kind of always there in the background. Well, look at the atomic weight of carbon. It's a little bit higher than 12. That little bit higher comes from that small amount of carbon 13 that is slightly heavier than the carbon 12. So what they've done for carbon 12 is calculated the weight of each naturally occurring isotope and multiplied it by how much they find in nature. The equation looks like this. The atomic weight, that's the number at the bottom of the periodic table for each box, equals the abundance of isotope 1, the first isotope, doesn't matter which one you call that, times its mass plus the abundance of isotope 2 times its mass. And I could just keep going. There's something with 12 isotopes, the abundance of one isotope times its mass. And you add all these together, and what you get is that number at the bottom of each box in the periodic table. So for carbon 12, I would say the atomic weight is, and there are two ways to express this, that is either 98.89 divided by 100, or 0.9889. Either way works. We're just trying to express the percent without using the percent itself. So if I wrote 98.89 over 100 times 12, and I guess I should do this right, times 12 AMU plus the abundance of the second isotope, 1.11 over 100 times 13.0043. Do the math and you will find 12.011 AMU is the answer. So to do this experiment, you need to know a lot of information. To do the calculation, you need to know what the percent abundance is of each isotope you find, which isn't always that easy, because sometimes if I were looking for potassium out in nature, I might look at a concentration of potassium mineral and get one ratio, and then I go to around the world to a different mineral of potassium and get a slightly different ratio. And so the calculation is not an easy, straightforward one. What we will do is tell you what the percent abundances are. We're not going to tell you what went into finding that. And then you also need to know the mass of each atom, which is also not an easy thing to determine. You can't measure one atom at a time on a scale. you need a completely different method, and if Dr. Tulin wants to tell you what that method looks like, I won't stop him. Now, what do you think about chlorine? It's got an atomic weight of 35.45. Can you maybe guess what isotopes go into that calculation? What do you think the most abundant isotope would be? Probably 35, chlorine 35. And what do you think the other one might be? 36 is a good guess. Turns out to be wrong. It's 37. And there's no way you could know that other than, other than to be told what it is. So when you look at these atomic weights, try to avoid the temptation of making a presumption of what isotopes go into that calculation. Now, some of them can be done. For example, lithium, 6.941, you could probably make a pretty good guess what isotopes are involved. Which is the most abundant isotope, do you think? Lithium 7 and the minor isotope? Probably 6. And when you're dealing with that small number of neutrons, you can't really jump. You can't. There's not too much variety there. Okay, so let me give you some data. And if you don't have a calculator to do the calculation here, at least set it up in your notes. The calculation for magnesium. So magnesium 24, magnesium 25 weighs 24.9. And finally, magnesium 26. Yeah, it's 10.00% abundant for magnesium 25. So, either set that up in calculator or just set it up in your notes. What is the mass, the atomic weight, or the atomic mass of magnesium? Is that how you had it set up? And if you didn't want to write this over 100 thing, you could have written 0.1101, and that would have been good enough. So, let's see if I can get this to work. 78.99 times 23.99. And my calculation gives me, those of you who have calculators, see if this agrees, 24.309029. Have you guys talked about significant digits yet?
Yes.
All right, so how many should I really have? 5, 4, 4, 5, 4, and 4. So that would be 24.31 AMU. And the periodic table says 24.30. Geez, what is that? 5. So our number was a little bit different from theirs. Why do you think that would be? Oh, no good scientist, if he's following the rules, is ever wrong. But there are reasons why they could be different. What do you think those reasons might be? Okay, the weights could be different. Could have been measured in a different way and got a slightly different value. Abundance is probably the one. Probably by the way, these numbers are still changing. The abundance that was known 20 years ago is different from the abundance that is known now. Different assumptions were made, different ways of averaging.
If it's ever changing, why do we have...
We've got to go with something, frankly, is what the answer is. That's the most correct value that we've got right now. And we admit that there are some numbers at the bottom. For example, lead's got something odd. The number below lead, 207.2. 4 significant digits in all, and everything else has at least 5, and some of them have 6, or maybe even 7. So what's wrong with lead? Why is lead only good to 4 significant digits? No, they can get much more than that. I mean, there are some up there that 6 or 7 significant digits.
Maybe by the calculation,
that's what they would use. Okay, so which number, percent abundance or weight, do you think is limited to 4 significant digits?
Abundance.
It's abundance. Weights, it turns out, can be very accurately determined for every single isotope of every element known. Percent abundance is the problem. It turns out there's too much variability as you go from lead source to lead source around the planet to get more than 4 significant digits out of that value. And so lead will always be 4 significant digits until somebody says that my lead source is better than everybody else's lead source. And then they can say they've got more significant digits. Of course, no one's going to get away with that. So this is the calculation for the atomic weight or the atomic mass. Never does it come out to be an integer. There are no integers there, except at the bottom of the periodic table. Then integers show up. For example, if I look at polonium, PO, element 84, the box, oh gee, what was it, 209, in parentheses, 209. What's going on there, do you know? It is an entirely man-made element. Okay, every atom of polonium that exists is decaying. Does it? Oh. Well, that complicates my answer, but... Polonium is a radioactive element. There are no stable isotopes of polonium. So if you've got an atom or a sample of polonium, it will be radioactive. And if all polonium is decaying, if I look at it this year and then I go back and look at it 2 years from now, the amount of polonium will be different. It will constantly change. In your book, I think what they've done, since polonium is actually formed from other elements that are decaying themselves, they've looked at what the abundance seems to be and reported that. But in fact, if you go to the polonium concentrations in a decade, they're going to be slightly different, and that will change the values that are in the book. Well, the atomic number is the count of protons.
No, the mass number.
Okay, so the mass number doesn't show up on the periodic table. The atomic number, if we were to use that value, the atomic mass is the average of all the naturally occurring isotopes. So kind of buried in there in a very difficult to find way, the mass numbers are there.
So it's like, you use the atomic mass, you find out the number of neutrons?
No. You can make a guess. You can say, well, silver is 207.8. It seems that 108 is the nearest integer. So maybe silver 108 exists. That's really the best you can do. But sometimes it won't work. Darn, I missed it. Well, no, I've been watching the names come in, and they keep changing. So this is just a popular person. Okay, let's see, where are we?
Question.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, that's what we've just done here. Naturally occurring means we can measure how much of it is out in nature, and then we average all their masses according to how much contribution each isotope makes to the total. So really, if you're after exact mass numbers, you don't find that on the periodic table. It just isn't there. You've had a lot of phone calls. All right. The last thing I wanted to talk about today has to do with the size of atoms. Atoms are small, much smaller than can be seen by the naked eye or by any instrument we have. Okay. There are sometimes you can get a guess at maybe where the atom is, but really atoms are too small. On average, an atom, and this is counting the size that the electrons have when they're orbiting, are about 100 picometers across. Sometimes you might get them as big as 400 picometers, but that would be a very big atom. Lots of electrons. Expressed in meters, what would this look like? 100 picometers would be 1 times 10 to the minus 10 meters. So if you line up 10 billion atoms, you might make a meter. They're very small. The nucleus of the atom is even smaller. Typically, a nucleus will be about 1 times 10 to the minus 14 meters across, or 10 femtometers. So in all, the nucleus takes up a very tiny portion of the size of an atom. You see comparisons. If the nucleus is the size of an orange, then the atom would fill a baseball stadium or something like that. I suppose that's accurate. They're very small. The way I like to look at it is in density. And your book mentions lead. Lead, if you look at the entire atom, has a density of 13.9 grams per cubic centimeter. 13.9 times heavier than water, or denser than water. The nucleus of lead has a density of 1.8 times 10 to the 14 grams per cubic centimeter. That's a massive density. In fact, it is the density of a neutron star. Your book makes the comparison. A paperclip would weigh 100 million tons if it had that density. So what we've got in the atom is huge amounts of empty space and a tiny, tiny dot in the center where all the mass is. When it was first proposed, of course, there was a little problem. With the electrons being negatively charged, you could imagine that they would try to fly apart until they got to a distance where they were held in by the positive charge of the nucleus. Why is the nucleus holding together all the positive charges? How can you get all these positive charges held together in one place? Okay. There are some very, very massive forces involved. For lead, that would be 82 positive charges held touching each other. That is not easy to do. And so there is such a thing as, they call it the strong nuclear force, very short range. You know, you get as big as uranium, and you're stretching how big that how big a block can be before that force starts to weaken on the edges and the atom begins to fall apart. But that's how it seems to work. These protons packed together in the nucleus where almost all the mass is. The rest of the atom, empty space, with electrons floating around out in that space someplace.
So it's just called strong force?
Yeah, the strong nuclear force.
And we don't know what that is. It's just
Yeah, it's just really strong. Kind of had to invent it to explain what's going on. It's very difficult to observe directly because you'd have to be the size of a nucleus to feel it. Okay, so that's today. Whoever gave me this, is that because you're taking off early? Because it doesn't seem to be due yet. Zach somebody? Well, I'll pass it on to Dr. Tulin. The end.